You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 4th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside David Brooks' long, long overdue performance review, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
He's never had a performance review.
Yeah, in the 10 years he's been at the New York Times.
I understand you listened to the entire Katie Couric.
I did.
Aspen Ideas Festival interview.
I did. Start to finish. Because journalism, baby.
He has quite a bubble over there.
He does.
Nah.
He really does. And there are...
We're not going to spend a lot of time on this.
No.
It's not a David Brooks podcast today.
No. David Brooks has a full-time assistant who edits his 800 words to make sure, he makes sure the apostrophes are all in the right places and that both sides are included in there. But apparently, it is just soul-crushing. The deadline demands of producing 800 words twice a week are so crushing that it flummoxes him from time to time. But the degree to which he and Katie Couric reveal pretty much the same. But the way he has coped with people like me and you and a few million others who criticize him. Remember back in the day when bloggers were going to hold the media to account, we're going to crash those gates.
Mm-hmm.
Where Marcos Melitzis' book, we're going to crash them gates and we're going to hold them to account. And it turns out it's really easy to avoid accountability by simply refusing to read any criticism.
Mm-hmm.
David Brooks doesn't read his comment section. David Brooks doesn't read his hate mail. David Brooks doesn't read anything that any of us write about David Brooks, which is ironic because David Brooks was given his break by William Buckley because he was writing for his school newspaper and Bill Buckley read a snarky, bitchy column, parody column, essentially calling Buckley a blowhard and a name-dropping jerk. And Bill Buckley said, is there a guy named David Brooks here? I'd like to offer him a job. So apparently Bill Buckley, his hero, read the comment section or what was a comment section back in 19, I'm guessing 79, 80, 81, something like that. But David Brooks copes with criticism by just ignoring it, by just shutting it out. And he has no performance review. No one reviews his work. He can go and do whatever he wants and write about whatever he wants. So he is literally unreachable, which we all sort of knew.
Mm-hmm.
That's the public part. The other parts that I'm not going to talk about because I'll write about him are...
800 words?
800 words.
In two columns?
I will do 1,600 words in one today and one in 3 days.
Yes. Yes, you will.
And apparently he asked George Will how he does it, and George Will has an index card for the next 13 ideas for columns he's going to write. And David Brooks has no idea what his next column is going to be. It's always a surprise to him. He has no columns on the spike, nothing sort of ready to go. He just tackles them all. And having deconstructed his work over the years, that's such bullshit. I mean, it really is. It's something, and Melissa McEwen, Shakespeare's sister, has written about this. I've written about this. Lots of bloggers have written how to write a David Brooks column because there's all stamped out of the same factory. It's something, 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 quote somebody else, and then assert the opposite, and then say both sides do it, and shrug your shoulders and say, who can say? Except liberals are probably a little bit worse. That's how you write a David Brooks column. It's really easy. And then occasionally you take big chunks out of a book you're reading and put it in your column and say, you should read this book. That's it.
That's it.
That's all
stop.
He does.
We're going to stop talking about David Brooks.
I will only add this.
Yes.
There's a lot more in the interview that I will be writing about that is of interest to me and I think will be of interest to lots of other people. That nobody has.
Blogspot.com this weekend.
Nobody has mined it.
Mm.
And I find it really interesting from a psychological point of view. The more room you give David Brooks to talk, even if you don't ask him any hard questions, the more it becomes clear that he is deeply delusional. You know, and Katie Couric was the same person who disassembled Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
But this was her friend. And so he left a whole lot of softballs just hanging out there that any Cub reporter would have tackled. And she didn't because...
Well, Aspen Ideas Festival is a big cocktail party, apparently.
Yeah. And you don't make each other uncomfortable. No. The pact is you never ask hard questions of each other or make each other uncomfortable, make each other look foolish on stage because that's the deal. Anyway, that's what's coming up.
It's a subsidized vacation for wealthy intellectuals.
Oh, it is. You know. It is. And it's...
And I'm not jealous.
No.
At all.
No, but it. I have absolutely no problem with the whole idea of an academic or a journalist or an op-ed person finding some position. I would love a job like this where I'm completely on my own. I can write about whatever I want. I have that job. It's called blogging. I can write about whatever I want. But I'm not subsidized, and I'm not, except by my very generous readers and the generous listeners to this podcast. But the whole idea that the blogging revolution had at its core was we will introduce a feedback loop into the media where our opinions and what's happening in the real world will penetrate into their mainstream media bubble and force them to deal with shit they don't want to talk about because it embarrasses them, or they have Defense Department stock, or their spouses are lobbyists, and all the shit that they never talk about that definitely influences the stories that they talk about and influences how they talk about them, influences how they set our public debate. And that is just never going to happen because they are in this completely self-contained, mutually protected shell, and we're going to be on the outside forever. And so I wouldn't begrudge anybody having a job like that, as long as they are actually responsive to people on the outside tapping on the glass, asking them, but what about this? And that doesn't happen. So it's, you know, it's back to where we were in the 90s.
We have a letter from a listener this week that I thought was just fantastic. And it calls us out, Driftglass. It calls us out.
Oh, we don't listen. No. You didn't. You weren't listening to everything I just said.
I was listening to the bubble you were in. Okay.
No, nobody's allowed to contradict
us. We read our comments section, and we read our letters, and we read them personally. We don't have an assistant to do it for us. So this is from a woman who wants to be known as Black Girl in a Blue State. All right. And she writes, first off, I love you guys in the podcast. I could listen to Driftglass rant all day, countered by lovely blue gal sensibility. It is in that spirit that I channel my inner Driftglass and touch on a comment one of your listeners wrote that irritated me so much I'm still fuming. One of your listeners asked how any black person could go to Florida after the Trayvon Martin situation. Mm-hmm. My gut tells me the caller was white, because as a black person, I immediately wondered where exactly black people should vacation or live.
Yeah. Yeah.
What state has never shown any hostility to black people? What state has a black person never been murdered unjustly? Excuse me, but that comment reeked of white liberal privilege. I'm sure if all black people left Florida with its beautiful beaches and amusement parks, that would really show Florida. Once word gets out that we are no longer attending Disney, I wonder if it will be more popular with all whites or less.
Uh-huh.
If you have to think about that too long, then you do not know anything about this country.
Mm-hmm.
What more do we have to do? My grandfather fought for a country in World War II that did not even consider him an equal human.
Mm-hmm.
My mother went to segregated schools. I was born in the 1970s in a blue state where integration was being rolled out at a snail's pace well into the 80s. For your information, segregation was everywhere, not just the South.
Absolutely. The Chicago suburbs where there was more
racism in Chicago, Martin Luther King said.
Oh, yeah.
And uglier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 3 generations later, my kid is not even supposed to have a goddamn vacation like every other American white kid expects. Instead of asking why black people are going to Florida, we should be asking what white liberals are willing to do to clean up racism in their house.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you all collectively own that house, even though you may not be personally responsible for the rotting floors and roof.
Mm-hmm.
You can't throw on the floor, sip tea, and wag your finger at the asshole punching holes in the wall. White liberals can't even muster a comment when a coworker makes a racist comment or joke. They can't even bother to pretend to be concerned about stop and frisk on the liberal island of Manhattan unless they have a biracial kid. Stop asking us to do all the work while patting yourself on the back simply because you think it might be a bad idea to kill unarmed black kids. You are exactly the moderates Driftglass talks about. You twist yourself into knots to excuse white liberal racism with your can't we all get along bullshit. Yes, this is a prime example of both sides crap. We have never as a group in this country enslaved, beat, wrote laws against, or oppressed whites. Never happens. So let's stop acting like both sides are responsible to fix this. That's like asking women to help prevent rape. We have done everything humanly possible to improve our situation in this country, only to be met with resistance at every turn. Let's not even pretend for one second that Democrats are not simply the lesser of two evils when it comes to racism. Sure, you'll vote for the black guy and call out a Republican, but I can't tell you how many white feminists have angrily told me how Hillary deserves to be president and expect black people to just get on board. Yeah, I'm sure she will be so awesome when she gets to take credit once the economy bounces back. Can't wait to read all the think pieces by liberals comparing strong, wonderful Hillary to that Obama disappointment. Eye roll. As in E-Y-E, roll. Yes. As a black woman, I'm starting to feel increasingly annoyed, left out, and ignored by progressives. Take black women completely out of the equation, and you may be dealing with a Romney presidency. We do more than our share and get so little in return, so stop telling us not to go to Florida. Stop telling us who is and who isn't the enemy. Stop telling us to move out of bad neighborhoods so you can move in and gentrify while our kid gets killed in your nice neighborhood for wearing a hoodie. Stop telling us what to do, because quite frankly, it's like listening to a moderate Republican's opinion on Iraq. You are always wrong, and you've demonstrated your willful ignorance at best and hostility at worst. I know how this comes off, and I know this isn't anything that white liberals want to hear. It's so much easier to blame redneck Southern Republicans for all the ills of racism while sitting back feeling morally superior because you have black friends and never said the N-word. But that isn't the way to honestly clean this country up and give everyone a fair shot. If the writer of the comment that started this rant was indeed black, I submit this along with a comment to all professional left black listeners. When have white liberals ever come to our defense when it could not be used as a weapon against conservatives? I'll be on vacation in Florida while I wait an answer. Thank you both for listening, and I totally understand if you choose not to read part or any of this email on the show. I get it. It is your show. And I will continue to be an avid listener of one of the few no BS liberal podcasts out there. Love you guys. Thank you. We need more of you.
That's an awesome.
That's an awesome letter. I would take issue with whites have never been beaten for their race because the Irish were treated in many ways horribly. You know, we've mentioned before that the Irish unloaded dynamite off of ships because the life of an Irishman was worth less than the life of a black person in Virginia. Worth monetarily to the white power.
Exactly. Literally worth in dollars
literally
and cents.
Worth in dollars and cents less. Yeah.
Yeah. It was easier to let Irish people die.
Property that was of value and Irish people could just be discarded.
But so and that we're talking about my, you know, my hillbilly ancestors, my Scotch-Irish ancestors from Missouri and other places in this country. But we get to assimilate.
Yep.
You don't.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Exactly. And there's a whole, you know, the one of the quintessential books on race theory is called When the Irish Became White.
Exactly.
Because the Irish can become white. And
exactly.
Hispanics can become white. This is the interesting thing about polls that happened 10 years ago as opposed to now. The census that Hispanics consider themselves white once they learn English.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will write down white Hispanic because they're Anglo. You know, that's what it means to be white in America to that culture is once you've learned English, you can assimilate.
Right.
And African-Americans have never been allowed that privilege that she's talking about.
Well, if you can pass.
Oh, stop. No, we're not going to get into that.
There have been a lot of examples of I can't remember his name, the gentleman lecturing about that and then mentions that, by the way, I'm African-American. I pass.
Mm-hmm.
And there's it's 20 hours worth of podcast to cover all of the gradations of privilege and outsiderhood and the people who can never get to the inside and the idea that, hey, we have a black president. So we're done.
Yeah.
But no, I think your letter is right on point.
Spot on. Yeah.
I would respectfully disagree with a couple of points. I would point out that women, which I believe you mentioned, have a similar problem in the way they are objectified and treated.
Mm-hmm.
And I
put in our notes, the political chattering class and the political parties do treat voters like crops.
Yeah.
women, Hispanics, blacks, seniors, etc. All of them are treated like, okay, this block of people.
Right.
And they're not treated like people. They're treated like a number and right. dehumanized.
They require,
that just happens.
They require X amount of irrigation and fertilization.
Yeah, and then you harvest. And here's what we have to harvest. And I thought it was really interesting that Party Line Crasher, that Thad Cochran had his campaign, excuse me, he was not on the conference call, but there was a Thad Cochran conference call. We didn't get to talk about the Thad Cochran election last week.
Mm-hmm.
The Party Line Crasher talked about, you know, from the headlines I read, it seemed like a very racist thing of people who used to pick cotton now are voting for Republicans because you are gathering up black votes
right.
to win Republican primaries, and how dare you.
Mm-hmm.
But this Party Line Crasher was actually talking about harvesting black votes. Now, yeah. he's racist, and they had to end the conference call because this guy was clearly embarrassing to them. Harvesting black votes, that's how we harvest women votes and harvest Hispanic votes. Mm-hmm. And the discussion of Hispanics becoming Democrats for three generations from now is being talked about as if they are somehow owned by the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that's not the way voters work. I mean, that's not the way it works. So,
no, the Democratic Party, of which I am a member, although I have voted outside of my party more than once, I'm very much like the person that our letter writer is addressing, in that I am of two minds. Mm-hmm. One is, I completely get your point. Number two, every time we have followed Glenn Greenwald's advice, you know what we should do? We should withhold our votes. As Democrats, you know, we should force them to accommodate us. And of course, he's talking and people like that are talking about their one issue. I have this one issue. And this is where, frankly, white privilege comes in.
And I was going to say, this is from a white male privilege
perspective. I am wealthy. I'm a global traveler. I have
high education,
very high education. Yeah. I have all the privilege I could ever want. I'm an attorney. I have everything I need. And I have this one issue, and it's an important issue. And it's
and totally, I have a microphone. I have a giant microphone anywhere I want. Yes.
And the part about this is an important issue is true. The part that this is the trump card that trumps every other issue. And if you dare to bring up any other issue, you're a monster. You're siding with authoritarian jackbooted blah, 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 is bullshit. Is that part of the argument is just bullshit. And I can hold both those thoughts in my head at the same time because they're both true. I really want one of our two major political parties because all our culture is going to support ever are two political parties. Until we're a parliamentary system, we're stuck with having two contending parties and a bunch of little ones at the edges. And
Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to call me every day money.
Yes.
And she's not going to get any.
And Alan Grayson is going to send me five emails every hour.
Every hour.
And I keep responding to him. Do you have a job for me? I'd like to be fully employed for the first time in 7 years, six years.
Yeah, if I had a full-time job, I'd be able to donate money to Alan Grayson.
I could scrape together $5 for you, Alan, but I don't have no job. And it's weird that I don't because I seem to be on the same side of you in every issue, and we seem to be a simpatico. So it's weird that
I did send a political contribution this week. $5. And that's the first time I've done it in years.
Yeah.
I sent $5 to Nina Turner in Ohio. Because I believe in democracy.
Yes. Well, and
Nina Turner's running for Secretary of State in Ohio to undo the damage from all of these restrictions on voting. And good for her. And I support that. Not because it's good for Democrats.
No, because
it's good for this country.
Good, period.
Yes.
And we have a long list of causes that we give a little bit to because it is what we have.
Habitat for Humanity is a big one for me. Yeah.
And the Heifer.
Heifer International, the children, and American Cancer Society. Yeah.
Everybody has enough in their sofa cushions to give somewhere.
Yeah.
And you should.
A small amount. Yeah, sure.
But the idea that what we need to do is step aside electorally, and this is actually a Mad Men episode.
Everything's a Mad Men episode.
Well, this is one moment in a Mad Men episode, and I'm treading on very thin ice here, but I'm gonna go there anyway. It's the episode called The Flood, which is the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
and how people on the ground in real time reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. not national headlines, but real people, actors, reacted in diners and at award ceremonies and in elevators.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Draper's wife gets a call from her father, and his response is to this tremendous tragedy. This, even the worst character on the show is just shocked by this and horrified
mm-hmm.
by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reaction from her father is he applauds the acceleration of the decay.
Mm-hmm.
And she responds.
Because he's this French Marxist in an ivory tower who writes about Marxist theory all day long.
And she says, I'm sick of your Marxist bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's what we're being offered as a solution mm-hmm. to the problem of the Democratic Party by lots of people who live in little ivory towers and are completely unaffected by restrictions on abortion rights, restrictions on voting rights, the destruction of the middle class, and all the things that are the basic bread and butter concerns of everybody. They're never going to not be able to hail a cab in New York.
Right.
They're never going to be shot for wearing a hoodie. These people do not live in the same world as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, their concerns are, look, here's what we should do. We should step out of the way and let Republicans win. And then it becomes more disastrous. And once everything becomes complete catastrophe, then we can sweep in and have reforms. It'll be awesome. And the unicorns will come and the leprechauns will ride the unicorns. And then we'll have everything. Everything will be great.
But I think we're still deflecting when we bring Glenn Greenwald into the mix. I'm not talking about our own privilege as white people in the Midwest who live in a white neighborhood.
Absolutely.
And we travel to Florida because we have family there.
Yep.
You know, family that happens to be Republicans who are very good people. We love them. But, you know, this is something that we all have to do the work.
Yes, and it needs to be on the table.
Yeah.
And the first step, I believe, and I'm speaking outside of my expertise. part of me, the sort of white liberal guy in me says I have no business speaking about this at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have some experience. My ex is African American. I know her family very well. These have been my friends and neighbors and associates, and I know that sounds a lot like, you know,
I have a special black friend.
Your
special black ex-wife.
Yeah. I'm playing the special black friend card. But all of the things, the first thing is to keep the issue on the table.
Yeah.
And to force people to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do beyond that because I'm not smart enough to figure out what a better country would look like. My imagination doesn't.
A better country would look like we have equal access to the polls.
Yeah.
And we in the white liberal democratic world do not take for granted that mm-hmm. African Americans have to show up to vote for Hillary Clinton or whoever.
Yes.
For the cause, man. You know, that this is, you have to do this. We're not a crop. None of us are a crop to be harvested.
Right.
So I did want to add, there was a commenter at Crooks and Liars yesterday who helped me put a happy bow on all of this in that he spotted in Florida a Ben Carson 2016 bumper sticker.
Well, there you go.
So black girl in a blue state, if you're down in Florida and you spot a Ben Carson 2016 bumper sticker, take a photo of it for us.
Take a photo and send it along.
Oh.
And I know this is kind of scattered and doesn't make any sense, but that's because, frankly, I don't have any easy answers in my pocket.
Yeah, but I want to keep it on the table, and I want to make sure we don't ignore our own white privilege when we're talking about these things. And I'm really, that's why I wanted to read this entire letter on the air. We did not edit this at all.
And if you haven't read it, go read Ta-Nehisi Coates on reparations.
Okay. Yep.
Read the whole thing. It's bleak. I mean, it's a fairly bleak mm-hmm. outlook on the future.
Yep.
But part of me as a Pollyanna believes we're going to be here in 100 years.
Yeah.
And wants to believe that in 100 years, things will be better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I believe that is I look back 100 years and things were worse.
Yep.
And things have gotten better. And it's from a place of extreme privilege, especially when measured against the rest of the earth,
mm-hmm.
That I say that. But it appears to be true. So the best I can do is read your letter on the air, agree with you, and hope that this issue is not pushed aside by people who think that, like the women in the civil rights movement, you should be in the kitchen making sandwiches. This is a man's job. Fuck you. So thank you for the letter and keep them coming.
Well, we're going to keep talking about women because it's time to talk about Hobby Lobby.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
and yarn and knitting. I mean, that's it's all together in one big subject.
I'm going to step back and just let you.
No, I want you to talk about Andrew Sullivan and Ross Douthat first, because they're like, white men and they should speak first.
I would like to point out that what I just said was I will let you do this. And I
yeah. See
the patriarchy. It's right there.
You're going to let
like
me
Matrix.
Go first? No, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay.
Because really, we should hear the opinions of Andrew Sullivan and Ross Douthat. Did they have a feud this week?
No, they were. Andrew Sullivan wrote a column about the Hobby Lobby case and how. And I'm putting words in his mouth, and I realize that, but they're my words, and I like them, and I think they're appropriate. How the ladies shouldn't get their vaginas in a bunch because you know pot has gotten way more legal. And there's a lot more people being able to get gay married. Therefore, essentially, the liberal progressive agenda is ascendant. We have pretty much won the day because the two issues that he cares about are in ascendant.
And he wrote this while he was high, right?
I assume so.
And gay.
Well, no. Yeah, exactly. No, he's in a bubble. He lives in pretty much in, he lives in a – even though he wrote a very hilariously confused column about David Brooks saying – and by the way – according to Andrew Sullivan, David Brooks is a liberal.
I heard
so
that.
So it's fascinating the way
I
he
heard
will.
That from the front of the house when you screamed.
Yeah, David Brooks is a liberal. The reason he's a liberal is he believes in sending forth American military power and democracy and conquering other countries.
Interventionist in the Middle East, therefore he's a liberal.
He's a liberal. And this
makes no sense to me, but I'm just a chick.
You're just a chick. You couldn't understand it. No, this is the contortions Andrew Sullivan will go through to pretend that. And in the same article, he says, you know, I believe conservatism will solve all of our problems. But conservatism, sadly, is very much misunderstood in America, because the only person who understands real conservatism is Andrew Sullivan. So the degree to which he will contort himself to make conservatism, quote unquote, comport with whatever the hell he had for breakfast this morning.
But what did he say about Hobby Lobby?
Well, Hobby Lobby was essentially, and he quoted Cardinal Ross Douthat on this.
Okay.
That essentially liberals had won. The liberals had swept a victory on the two issues that he cares about. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you and I, Blue Gal, need to be magnanimous in victory. We need liberals used to be able to understand that from their majoritarian position, minorities deserve to have their respect and to have their positions respected. You know, the Christian right is a minority.
Was Andrew Sullivan raised Roman Catholic?
Yeah. Yes, he was.
Yeah. Thought so.
And he was
and
raised.
And so was Ross Douthat.
And he was raised in a Petri dish.
And yeah. And so was Laura Ingraham. Ingraham is a convert to conservative Catholicism. So this is.
And so liberals.
Part of what's going on here is the priest in the back of their brains is saying, suffer it to be so now.
Yeah.
Because abortion, you know, is contrary to the teachings of the church.
Uh-huh.
And they can't let that little brain grain go. Yeah.
No. Well, but he wants us essentially to beat our blogs into plowshares.
Yeah.
And recognize that we've won and that we need to be generous and magnanimous to the poor, dumb bastards who are minority. They're a minority. They have no power. They have nothing.
Not in the Supreme Court. They're not.
Well, that was
five to four.
The Supreme Court was, you know, well, that's just an outlier. That's just
the fucking Supreme Court is an outlier. All right. I'm taking over the podcast now.
Yeah. And then, of course, the next day, Sam Alito comes out and says, by the way, that little narrow decision part, fuck that. This applies to everybody.
Yeah.
And I just pointed out to Andrew Sullivan, who clearly knows fuck all nothing about liberals and about conservatives. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. I know
and about women.
Well, and this is the same guy who deployed Michael Oakeshott, his standard bearer, his conservative touchstone, as pro-Iraq war when it was convenient, and then anti-Iraq war when it was convenient, and never mentioned the fact that he had prostituted his hero. What is it? And conservatism isn't really an ideology, Blue Gal. Conservatism is the only thing that can save America, Andrew Sullivan's conservatism. And I pointed out that, you know what? These people, and this is, again, a broad generalization of my conservative fellow citizens, but these are the same people, and he said they've surrendered. These are the same people who surrendered at Appomattox, and then they surrendered again during civil rights, and they surrendered again during during Jim Crow.
The Missouri Compromise.
Then they surrendered. They keep surrendering, and then they keep coming back. because they're never going to fucking let it go. They believe that God has bestowed upon them the absolute right and responsibility to rule over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
White men in charge, everyone else in
white,
the back of the
white
bus.
Christian and male. Yeah.
And they will not let it go. And he this fantasy that now that pot and gay marriage is now that my shit's taken care of, let's all not go crazy. Let's let them have some stuff. They're losing. You know what?
All right. And now I'm going to talk about knitting.
Roll it, baby.
I have been, Hobby Lobby sells yarn, and I don't buy my yarn from Hobby Lobby. Haven't for a very long time, primarily because of all the Chinese crap that's in that store.
Well, you buy from independent.
I do. I buy from local, and I buy a little bit of yarn on the internet from time to time. But I tend not to buy from big box stores when
you buy from people.
People.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But, I've been planning to knit a back-to-school sweater for Junior Dude, and I've been looking at patterns and came across the thought that there is something in sweater knitting called ease, E-A-S-E, like in easy. And what is so funny, I laughed this morning with you that this morning in the Knitting Daily email, the subject line was understanding ease.
Yeah.
As I've been talking to you about it all week and how I was going to mention this on the podcast. So here are three or four sentences from the Knitting Daily email about what ease is.
Mm-hmm.
What is ease exactly? Well, it's the extra width that allows free movement in a garment. And understanding how it works can be the key to making a sweater fit. One thing about ease I learned the hard way was to pay attention to the garment measurements in the pattern. So what happens in sweaters, and particularly in men's sweaters, is you will have 6 inches or more of ease. That means looseness. You might have a 34 waist, but the waist in your sweater will be 40 because you're given 6 inches of ease.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very hard time. You don't want to knit a sweater. I don't want to knit a sweater for Junior Dude that is huge on him, because he has sweatshirts that are huge on him.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time to knit a sweater. If I knit a huge sweater, it's going to take longer.
And let me just point out, I have stopped growing. So
I still won't knit sleeves for your sweater. It's too long.
Yeah, that takes a long time.
So all of the patterns I was looking at for Junior Dude had 6 inches of ease or more.
Uh-huh.
There are women's sweaters, and it's almost exclusively women's sweaters that are designed with what's known as negative ease. And I love that concept of negative ease.
Yeah.
It sounds counterintuitive, says Knitting Daily, but it simply means the garment is supposed to stretch to be slightly or totally form-fitting.
Uh-huh.
So the finished piece will actually be smaller than your measurements, but it's supposed to be that way because the sweater is supposed to be tight.
That's right.
And as I said before, men's sweaters hardly ever, ever, ever have negative ease.
Mm-hmm.
Muscle shirts often have negative ease to show the six pack and the ripples and so forth. But
Cary Grant's sweater never had negative ease, but Jane Mansfield's always did. Right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So here, just thinking about Hobby Lobby and ease, Judge Scalia.
I've heard of him.
How much ease does he have? Mm-hmm. Judge Alito and the other three male judges in this Hobby Lobby decision decided to make the unscientific but deeply held sincerely held religious beliefs, right?
Uh-huh.
They decided to make that the basis for interpreted law. And they've always had positive ease in this world.
Exactly.
They have all the room in the world to move around and do what they want to do and make unscientific. But, scientifically speaking, an IUD is not an abortion. Abortifacin, is that what they call them?
Abortifacient. Yeah.
Patient, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But these people genuinely believe in this false statement that they are abortifacient. So we have to take that into account. These corporations sincerely believe a falsity.
I remember vividly 20 years ago, I was outside of a 7-Eleven. I was buying something, probably, I don't know what. But
cigarettes?
Probably something. Buying pot. It was legal then. Don't you remember? Back when pot was legal everywhere. I was stopping this, and I don't know why I remember this. I remember the time and location because it just struck me. There was a woman on the radio, a conservative Republican woman 20 years ago, 25 years ago, whatever it was, talking about how she is she's anti-choice, but she has no problem with contraception. She wants to be reasonable. She wants to be moderate. She wants to be a centrist. She wants to reach out to both sides. I thought, well, okay, that's a place to start a conversation anyway. Okay. And I listened to her being interviewed, probably on NPR, and the reporter started asking her how she defined contraception. What about a condom? Oh, no, condom is essentially an abortion. Oh, what about an IUD? No, that's basically that's an abortion. Contraception to her was abstinence and the rhythm method, and that's it.
Yep.
Everything else was, according to her mind, an abortion, either a de facto abortion or a de jure.
When you have sex, that's to make a baby, and if you aren't trying to make a baby, you're sinning. Yeah.
And if you're using any artificial method of preventing pregnancy from happening, whether it's blocking the sperm, making the egg unviable, using spermicide, anything, you're using any method other than God's own method, God's natural brand. You're committing an abortion. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then I was like, oh, she simply has redefined an entire category of science to suit her fundamentalist religion. Mm-hmm. Abortion means everything I don't agree with, period. And therefore, I can sound reasonable. I can sound perfectly rational and willing to compromise as long as you never ask me what the fuck I'm talking about when I say abortion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really is. And that has now been codified into law. The Supreme Court has basically said that woman has every right, according to her faith, to define
and to impose that belief.
Mm-hmm.
If she owns a family business, even if it's making $3 million a month,
mm-hmm.
she has the right to tell her employees to live within those guidelines.
And now that now that the nose is under the tent of, you know, the camel's nose is under the tent, once you've decided non-humans have human rights,
mm-hmm.
there's no end to it.
Exactly. And that's where I want to go with this, which is this, just to put a ribbon again on this Hobby Lobby decision. This isn't about abortion or birth control. This is about employers having control over your life.
It's about capitalism.
Capitalism.
And it's about employers controlling your life, employers deciding what you can and can't do. This is part
and they've opened the floodgates to say employers, not only can they fire you at will for nothing.
Right.
But they own you.
They can fire you at will for nothing. They can they can find out what you're doing on your quote own time unquote and fire you for that.
Yeah.
Buried on the same day, but not very deeply buried, is the same Supreme Court taking another chunk out of labor.
Yep. Yep. And the case is an Illinois case regarding home health workers.
Yep.
What race and gender do you think those folks are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is where I want to remember. Go back and remember Black Girl in a Blue States Letter.
Yep.
Because when we talk about making room in the law for women and minorities, we are making a presumption that the space is originally owned by whites, Christians, and men.
Yes.
And this segues beautifully into the case of California.
Absolutely. Yep.
Which is where we're going with our final segment here. Immigration and ugly Americans waving flags and saying go home.
And terrifying children.
Immigrants and terrifying children in Murrieta, California.
Because that's just what Jesus would do. I mean, you just know that's exactly what Jesus would do.
I find it fascinating, too, that stopping the bus at the border is what Mississippi did to the Freedom Riders.
Yeah.
No one's mentioned that, but...
Yeah.
They stopped him at the border and put him under arrest. There was no problem with the Freedom Riders in Mississippi. We just arrested him at the border.
Right. Remember when people were fleeing Katrina?
Yeah.
Stopped on the bridge. Yeah.
Yep.
Not in our town. You ain't coming to our town.
Yeah.
And it's...
And here is a bunch of teabaggers. I'm sorry, but that's what they are.
Or as I refer to them, Republicans.
Yes.
Because there is no Tea Party.
Well, and no one pointed out that they were interfering. Well, I guess they did point out on Lawrence. Interfering with law enforcement. These people were detained. The people on the bus were being detained.
Right. They were in the middle of a process, a law enforcement processing them.
Where the likelihood was that the people protesting were going to get what they wanted. These folks would be eventually deported.
Yes.
But surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Yep.
The mayor of Murrieta and the local cops cooperated with the anti-immigrant races, actually told them where to be, the mayor did. Mm-hmm. And now the mayor's upset that the media is stereotyping the citizens of Murrieta.
Well, I believe when he's referring to the media, he's referring to outside agitators.
Outside agitators.
Outside agitators coming down here to tell us how to treat our immigrants. How dare you, sir? How dare you? And yeah.
And, you know, the people on the bus, I keep going back to this unaccompanied minors thing, and these new immigrants are refugees. They are refugees. And how do we treat refugees in this country is so horrible in this particular instance.
Yep.
A lot of them are refugees from, you know, failed state gang violence.
Yes.
Some of them are refugees, economic refugees, which we seem to have this special case of we're not going to let economic refugees in our country because everybody will want to come.
Right.
I find that hilarious because a lot of the commentators on Fox News, like Sean Hannity.
Sean and Bill O'Reilly.
Irish.
They're fucking Irish. They're my people. I apologize again for my people.
And whenever you see an Irish commentator say, yeah, but we don't allow economic refugees in this country.
Hey.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Oh, your country's fucked up? That's not my problem. Get back on the boat.
The potato famine brought your people here.
Yes. Yes,
asshole.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And the reason...
And I got to say, I think Laura Ingraham is just a complete fraud.
Oh, yeah.
She's lying about her... She has taken this absolutist nativist position to gain listeners and money, period.
Yeah.
Did you know that Laura Ingraham has adopted a child from Guatemala?
I did not know that.
She's adopted two children from Russia, and she's a single mom. And she writes really funny columns. She wrote a book about... the funny things that happen in America, like Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
She snarks about it.
Yeah.
And she snarks about single motherhood, and she snarks about baby-proofing her house. And when she writes those kind of family circle Women's Day articles, she's a good writer. She's a, you know, Ivy-educated, well-educated woman.
Mm-hmm.
But she's full of shit when she's talking about, you know, we need to deport everybody, and and she goes further than Bill O'Reilly will go in terms of, you know, don't allow them to sign a contract for an apartment and they'll move back.
Yeah.
Is her attitude.
Well, and
Laura Ingraham's mother's name, by the way, is Kozak.
Oh, really?
A-O-Z-A-K.
Yeah, a traditional Native American
name. Traditional Native American name. You know, it's Slavic. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So she's full of shit. I'm sorry. I call bullshit on her big time.
And it's part,
but there's an audience for that. That's
the thing. And the point is there's an audience, and it everything about this is going through the Fox lathe and mill work to make sure it fits perfectly into their overall mosaic of the Obama presidency as the worst president in history and part of a vast conspiracy to destroy America from within and without, conspiring with people who hate us, letting immigrants just sweep through this country, letting terrorists in the country, giving them weapons and so forth. And it really is all part of the same narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of this hateful, lunatic, the brown people have taken over and are stripping us of our rights. He's giving away the country to people who want to kill us. And look, here's another example of that. I bring that up because as I was tooling around yesterday, I believe I was picking up some sandwiches.
Yes, for your wife.
For my wife.
Yourself.
Yes. And I flipped through the radio, as I do sometimes, and I picked up a Fox News, and they were wallowing in Bill Ayers.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Barack Obama deliberately associating with murderous terrorists. You know, he is basically a terrorist. He lets them. He forgives them. He started his career with them.
And now that Richard Mellon Scaife has passed away today.
Yes.
I'm waiting for the conspiracy theorist about it. You know, this is the timing of this death.
Is so suspicious.
Really suspicious.
You know why Barack Obama had him killed? To distract from Benghazi, obviously.
Never mind that Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign, Richard Mellon Scaife gave her money.
Yeah.
And so did Rupert Murdoch.
For those of you who don't know who Richard Mellon Scaife is, he was the funder of the American Spectator. He was the guy who gave the American Spectator magazine and others big bags of money to write lies.
Lie about the Clintons.
And
what did you say? Who did you say killed Richard Mellon Scaife?
Zombie Vince Foster, obviously.
Oh, but poor taste.
I never have pretended to have good taste, except in who I marry and
yes.
so forth. But it's all part of this broader narrative. Every Fox story makes no sense at all to you because you are sane until you realize how it fits like a jigsaw puzzle piece into the broader narrative that Roger Ailes has been building for 5 years. Mm-hmm. The dumbass David Brooks interview where he was just sort of, they were talking about the government being, you know, paralyzed and people being able to, not being able to get anything done. And he said, well, you know, that's just the way things are. But I go back to 2009 when, yeah, certainly Republicans were being Republicans, but Barack Obama could have used the opportunity to develop a majority coalition with conservatives. He could have peeled off some conservatives by doing like tax reform. And then they would have loved him and he could have built a majority coalition. But now we have a minority party and another minority party and the government is gridlocked. And he said, yeah, I get that Barack Obama came to power when the economy was in full collapse and he had to do something. And I get the fact that the stimulus was quote unquote controversial. No, it wasn't.
But
history plays some part in this. But Barack Obama should have at least tried to build a governing coalition with moderate Republicans so he could get lots of things done. And I just want to slap the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. Go back and look at what John Stewart's show 10 weeks after Barack Obama was inaugurated. Yeah.
And the tyranny.
And the Fox crazy ass machine was already cranked to 11.
Absolutely.
The conspiracy and the fact that he's a tyrant and a monster who wants to destroy America. That was all going on the media side. On the mm-hmm. political side, we now know that all the leaders of the Republican Party met in secret and came up with this strategy of blocking
everything. A conspiracy.
It was absolute conspiracy.
Yep, yep.
And David Brooks knows this on some level, but on another level, it's very inconvenient for him to say, no, the problem is the Republicans, because mm-hmm. at that point, he will get a performance review at the New York Times and he will be fired.
Full circle. We come back full circle.
So he can't say that, but it's part of the broader, it's got to be at least partially Barack Obama's fault that these people are crazy, that they're gun nuts, mm-hmm. that they're inflamed, that they're mm-hmm. nutty. And that broad narrative, the Fox narrative is not the problem. The narrative that as crazy and as conspiracy minded and as obstructionist and as bigoted as they are, the real problem are the people who let them off the hook for that.
Yep.
The real problem are the people who, no matter what Republicans say, will always come back with, yeah, but you know, liberals are bad. Mm-hmm. In both sides, Barack Obama should have done more.
Both sides.
That's the guy who, because he's the guy who's the alibi giver. He's the bail bondsman for the Republican Party. He's the one who bails out the Tea Party whenever they fuck up.
Well, and to sum it up perfectly, I want to thank Shock and a couple of other people who pointed out to me the LA Times article about, you know, both sides are really spinning this SCOTUS decision on Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, yeah. They're both wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to stop there.
That's a great idea. Let's stop there. And happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day to all the people in the United States who listen to us. And yes. Happy summer to everyone in the Northern Hemisphere. And happy whatever to everyone in the South.
Well, happy Independence Day to all of our expat listeners abroad.
Oh, yeah.
We have lots of people who listen to us from military bases.
And overseas and France and other places around the country, around the world. Yeah, we sure do. Southeast Asia, we do. Yep. Absolutely. We love all of you. Thank you so much. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. Oh, Driftglass.
Yes.
This week's internet kitty is very special.
She is.
Odessa belongs to a relative of ours, and she is magnificent. We got to see her last week. Mm-hmm. And she's a long-haired kitty who just, nothing phases her, even a power outage. Apparently, there was a power outage this week.
Yep.
At the house where Odessa lives, and she just handled it beautifully. She's very calm and loving and affectionate. Nah. Yeah.
She is. She's highly social. And
she's the perfect cat for that house. And
really,
so glad she lives there. And
yes, yes.
You can go and look at Odessa on our Facebook page and website this week.
She is a magnificent creature. I believe she is a Maine Coon cat.
She's something else. Her personality is just so lovely.
She's
love her.
Silky and wonderful, and we're so glad that she found her way to that home.
We are.
Perfect match.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at that address or any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties have formed their closely held corporation with a sincerely held religious belief that cat treats are a sacrament.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.